Is America going the way of the Roman Empire? A growing number of Christians think so, and I'm one of them.
Rod Dreher talking about his presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That's why I say that Christians today should take a new look at the way the early Benedictine monks, who emerged out of the ruins of Rome, responded to the collapse of their civilization. We can learn from them how to build stable lives of prayer, Bible study, and worship in strong communities. The Benedict option, as I call it, is not about running away from the world. It's about learning the practices of discipleship that enable us to stand firm for Christ against the world for the sake of the world.
You can meet and hear Rod Dreher making the case for the Benedict option at the Fall Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. Child care is free. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. If you were just casually observing the situation from afar, you might get the impression that the problem, and it definitely is a problem, a serious problem, of sexual assault on campus is epidemic, that especially by the reported numbers, it sounds like the most dangerous place to be a young woman in America today is there on the safe campus of your average university or college. You almost get the impression of marauding young male students simply picking out women and assaulting at will. And add to that just the culture of the college campus that encourages, positively encourages young people to behave this way, while at the same time setting up tribunals when assault charges are brought that ignore things like evidence and the presumption of innocence. It's a mess. We're going to be talking about sexual assault on campus and the presumption of innocence. Joy Pullman joins us on this Tuesday. She's a mother of four children, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids, and a recent column titled Senator Patty Murray Calls for Resignation of Trump Official Over Accurate Campus Rape Comments. Joy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
We hear a lot about rape culture on American campuses. What is usually meant by that, and how should we adjust our thinking on that particular term?
Well, what is usually meant by that is basically kind of some version of young women on campus are helpless victims. The sexual assault rates are very high. You know, the highest figures that they have been come up with are 1 in 5 young women will be assaulted while on campus, and that's disputed, but I mean, that's the kind of the going statistic among people who for whom this is a narrative. And so there's basically kind of this rampage of young men, you know, acting, I guess, too masculine, going around attacking women while they're out partying or just trying to get themselves an education. So that's kind of the feminist line that's been taken, talking about just really kind of scaring women off of college campuses or telling them that they need safe spaces and they need campus courts and this whole apparatus of therapy and ability to accuse typically young men, you know, of hurting them. And that's the typical understanding of the term.
So first of all, before we get to the circumstances under which many of these assaults, whether they be actual or alleged assaults, occur, let's talk about those campus tribunals. What does that mean?
Well, in 2011, the Obama administration sent a letter to all the colleges in the country. Almost all of them take federal funds, and so they have to do what the federal government wants whenever it gives them a wink and a nudge. And so that's what happened here. They basically told them that federal government, the Obama administration, would stop sending them these funds if they did not set up campus-based ways to adjudicate sexual assault claims. And so in response, colleges have been hiring numerous administrators. They've been creating kind of their own campus court systems, all in order to ostensibly comply with Title IX, a 65, maybe 69 law that required equal access to education opportunities for women. And so the Obama administration just decided to open up that law and stick in this idea that women cannot have equal access to an education if they are being assaulted on campus, and so made it incumbent upon colleges to, in addition to our civil criminal court system, campuses also now have to have their own court system for addressing these claims.
And there is a problem here with respect to how these courts or these tribunals are often conducted, and it has to do with either playing fast and loose with or ignoring what would prevail in the court system, and that is the presumption of innocence. Talk about that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so these campus courts, you know, the worst thing that a college can do to a student is expel him, you know, or her with a mark on his or her record, right? It's just the college. They can't put him in jail. You know, they can't require community service. The most they can do is, you know, the worst that a college could do to a student, really. So it's not that big of a penalty, even if, but what is really kind of a penalty, a lot of the suffering and pain is through the process. It has sometimes it taken several years for someone accused of wrongdoing through these campus courts to get any resolution of the case. There is no presumption of innocence, and in fact, the evidence that the Obama administration requires these courts to use a standard for evidence that says if 50.0001% likelihood of the crime occurring. Now, if that is the conclusion of if that's what it appears to the people assessing the information, then you have to hand down a guilty verdict based on that. So just barely over 50% is the standard rather than clear and convincing proof. And all of, you know, these campuses, they're allowed to set up their own parameters, which includes very often the accused has not made known who is the person accusing him, what the charges are, given the evidence before hearings, you know, that is going to be used against him, not given the opportunity to question a witness, to have legal counsel or anyone to help represent him. It's just, I mean, when you say kangaroo courts, it's really a kangaroo court. It's kind of, you know, like, you know, third world kleptocracy going on here, all in presumption that anyone who is accused is probably guilty.
Okay, so let's talk about the reality here as opposed to this picture of marauding men, you know, sweeping through the campus, just raping at will, which is often what we have. What is the reality of campus life and these, let's call them neutrally, at least at this point, sexual encounters that are probably far more common than any parent with college-age kids wants to think about?
Right. Well, I mean, so what we have right now is the Trump administration is considering reversing, ending, altering these rules that the Obama administration put into place. And so as part of that, they've been listening to testimony from groups that advocate for the rights of typically these young men who have been falsely accused. And so, I mean, for example, you know, one mom is talks about how her son, a medical student, was falsely accused. And, you know, she found him about to commit suicide, you know, bright young man with a future ahead of him was so despairing by this everything that he had to go through. So there are real costs to setting up systems like this on campuses, even if the worst they can do to him is expel him. What we're really not talking about, so I mean, that is important, I think, to think in terms of it's someone who is accused, you know, is presumed innocent until proven guilty and all those other things I mentioned for good reason within our criminal justice system, because we do not want to punish an innocent person for a heinous crime. And that is, you know, that's a very long standard of justice within the Western world, and most people, you know, still adhere and agree to it. So we're talking about, however, these procedural things. We're not really talking about why on earth are there so many accusations of, you know, sexual misconduct on college campuses. And to the New York Times, you know, the acting secretary for the Office of Civil Rights, Candace Jackson, was saying that she has found while kind of getting to the bottom of this issue in the department to try to address it with regulation, that the vast majority of these sort of encounters that later turn into complaints are related to students drinking. And that's corroborated. You know, I go on my article and look at a bunch of evidence. There's a variety of polls, of self-reports, of studies that show, you know, between two-thirds and up to 80% of cases in which later someone, you know, will say, wow, that, you know, that felt like assault, that didn't feel right, I'm upset over it, I regret that encounter. 60, you know, two-thirds to 80% of those encounters involve drinking. And, you know, if you, like I have read, you know, the reporting about education in the country for years, campus officials have been for decades, you know, trying to focus on binge drinking. Young people are drinking, they are getting themselves blackout drunk, they do what they call pre-gaming before they go out on weekends. You know, and this is, of course, not on all campuses, but on a number of campuses, you know, the party scene is a really big deal, and young people deliberately make themselves, you know, unable to make good decisions, and then they go out among a bunch of, you know, hormone-filled teenagers where everyone thinks that each other's body is up for grabs, and they end up doing things, you know, not in a state of exactly a sound mind. And then the next morning or the next week or even a couple months later, when they're sober, they think about that or they find consequences to that. They don't feel right and they don't know what to do with those feelings. So it's a real mess, but we're not talking about what on earth is going on underneath all of these accusations to make, you know, that I think is legitimate for young people, especially young women, because we're tenderer, you know, we have softer hearts in general. And we are, you know, the ones who in the counter stand the most to lose from being treated like a piece of meat. And so I think that even though it's not really fair for a young woman to say, you know, to a guy, sure, let's do it. And then after the fact, you know, she had agreed to something, you know, indicated that she was agreeing to something, then you can't, you know, change the terms after the fact. You know, the guy was going on your consent. But I do think it is really pointing to the fact that even getting drunk and having sex doesn't really make women feel better about doing it in the long run.
We're talking with Joy Pullman of The Federalist about sexual assault on campus and the presumption of innocence. When we come back, what she describes there is sounds like young women premedicating themselves in order to be promiscuous the way the culture demands. We'll talk about that after this.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about sexual assault on campus and the presumption of innocence. Joy Pullman of The Federalist is our guest, author of the book, The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of America's Kids. Joy, what you were describing before, the kind of the typical sexual encounter atmosphere on a college campus, sounds an awful lot like, at least from the girls' perspective there, kind of pre-medicating oneself to meet this expectation, this cultural expectation, that these girls be promiscuous on campus during their 4 years getting a college education.
You know, well, it's kind of really sad because we have these completely unself-aware comments from young women all over the media. You know, so I've read many, many profiles in major publications like the New York Times, the New Yorker, Vanity Fair, you know, kind of examining the hookup culture. And you will have women, you know, and in one breath say, this is the only way I can get attention is to essentially strip naked and, you know, rub on a guy, and then he essentially assaults me. You know, so so I know that's going to happen, and it doesn't really feel good, so I'm going to be drunk while it happens. they will literally say that with one breath, and then they will say, well, but I guess, you know, there's nothing else we can do if we want to be equal with men or if we want to be taken seriously. You know, so it's a huge contradiction. But young women have been told that, you know, that sex is not meaningful. It's just a bodily urge. There's nothing moral, you know, it doesn't even come into it. It's just a thing that we do to have fun. And so they are completely unprepared for the reality of what happens when that immoral, you know, worldview conflicts with reality, and they find themselves having, you know, this mess of feelings about, you know, those encounters they're having with people that it's not only that they're not even in love with them, you know, they don't even hardly know them sometimes.
So perhaps a scenario which plays into this is simple regret over a one-night stand. Not obviously not in every case, but these young women ill-equipped to deal with what they believe is expected of them in these situations, later, in essence, withdrawing a consent that may have been given in a half-conscious state.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, these women, I mean, in our culture, you are told that as a woman that you are a better woman, you're a stronger woman if you act like a porn star, which I think is heinous and horrible. But, I mean, that's the perception that men, I mean, we have, I'm trying to think about how to say this in a family-friendly manner. You know, we have 14-year-old girls who are going to have plastic surgery on their genitals because, you know, the boys at school are expecting them to look like porn stars. 14-year-old girls, you know. So this is the kind of culture that some young people live in, and it's absolutely toxic to their ability to really find happiness. So they are doing, you know, what they see other people doing, what pop culture is telling them is going to make them feel good, and they're finding that they feel wasted. You know, it's not just alcohol wasted, it's emotionally wasted. It's, you know, the completely unfulfilled and, you know, the opposite of happy. Very distressed over, you know, letting people treat their bodies like, you know, it's a pile of garbage, you know, something to chew up and spit out like a piece of gum. So when you're 14 years old, you don't know anything about what sex is like, you know, what life is like. And older people owe you an explanation and some sense of understanding about how precious your body and your sexuality is. And obviously many, many young people are not getting that, and it's devastating.
How do we deal then with, kind of at the center of this, the rhetoric that's flying around campuses, often associated with these campus tribunals, that even to think about allowing an accused young man, affording him the same rights that he would have, say, in a court of law, if these charges were brought in a court of law, the right to face his accuser. How do we deal with that when they say you are empowering the victimizer, the rapist?
Well, I actually think in this case what we really have is two people victimizing each other. Because even though, you know, the young women are ignorant and poorly educated, so are the young men. You know, they've been told that their self-worth is on how many women they rack up, you know, or whatever other horrible way of thinking about human beings that God made. And they are not being educated about what it really takes to be a man, which is not, you know, to use up a woman, but to protect her and love her for life and commit to her and the children that you might have together. So these young men are also, they've been cheated out of knowing, you know, how to treat human beings as well. So basically, you know, we don't have one victim here. We've got two victims, and they're kind of in this horrible codependent relationship. And I don't really know that there's much that courts can really do, especially, you know, given our culture. It's just not really politically tenable to say, well, we're going to start punishing premarital sex because we know that that sort of culture leads to this sort of outcomes where people are using each other. That's just not going to happen. So I think the best we really can expect of it is for the courts to say, you know, you might have been drunk, he might have been drunk, and you don't really know what was going on. Well, maybe we should focus on harm prevention, on, you know, reducing, you know, the alcohol on campus. If you can't blame a young man for taking a woman's yes as yes, and so women need to start saying no. They need to, you know, not be having as many drinks. And they also need to be told by their parents, by their teachers, by their society, that you are worth way more than this, that you should not stand for this kind of treatment, and that for someone to expect it of you is exploitation.
Finally then, Joy, you write this. The more people are called and judged as rapists whose offenses do not fit that term, the less rape victims will be able to secure justice. What do you mean?
Of course we know that there is, you know, there are cases of sexual assault. There are people who are heinously violated, and, you know, whoever perpetrates that should be prosecuted fiercely. You know, I think all decent people agree with that. And so the problem is that when we are broadening the definition of rape to assault to include, again, I'm going to try to be family friendly here, you know, from what everyone thinks of as rape, you know, a woman is held down and violated, as opposed to, you know, a guy tries an exploratory kiss. Those two things really don't belong in the same category. So maybe the KISS guy gets a smack on the face, but he doesn't need to be put in jail for a very long time, but the other guy does. And so the more that we expand the definition of that heinous crime to include things that aren't heinous, they're just kind of jerky or, you know, miscalculation or whatever else, you know, then not only do we increase the number of cases that our legal and campus systems have to take care of, which reduces the likelihood of bringing attention to the serious cases that need to be addressed first and most deeply, but we also are reducing, you know, the power of the words and the power of the concept so that if a woman who is deeply assaulted, you know, the term doesn't apply to her in a way, it doesn't have the sort of sting that it ought to have and carry the shame and the consequences that a genuine assault ought to carry. So there's less availability of justice for women who need justice when we are broadening the definition of assault.
Joy Pullman is a mother of four children, managing editor of The Federalist, author of the book The Education Invasion, How Common Core Fights Parents for Control of American Kids, and a recent column titled Senator Patty Murray Calls for Resignation of Trump Official Over Accurate Campus Rape Comments. You can read it and purchase The Education Invasion at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Joy, thank you.
Thank you.
In hour two of Issues Etc. on this Tuesday afternoon, we're going to be looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the three-year lectionary, looking toward the gospel reading in Matthew 13, where Jesus tells this parable of wheat and weeds all in one field, the wheat planted by the owner of the field and the weeds planted by an enemy. And when the workers for the harvest say, let's go weed the field, get those weeds out of there, the owner of the field says, no, we'll wait till the harvest. We're going to find out what all that means and look at the propers for this coming Sunday, according to the three-year lectionary with Dr. Carl Fikancher in Hour 2 of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Hi, this is Pastor Clayton from Zion Lutheran Church of Muscoota, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion is a congregation firmly grounded in God's grace given in the Word and Sacraments where we treasure the timeless beauty of the liturgy. Zion is also a vibrant, young, family-friendly congregation where you would be warmly welcomed. Zion is located at 101 South Railway Street in Muscoota, Illinois, and we would love to share God's gifts of grace with you. For more information, please visit our website at zionmuscoota.com.